Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. This, of course, is our weekly opportunity as blind and partially sighted people to get together and explore the world of technology. And don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's nothing without you. So we would love to hear from you. Let us have your questions, comments, feedback, suggestions, all that good stuff. You can reach us, Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Don't forget, of course, you can first hear Tech Talk each Tuesday lunchtime at 1 right here on RNIB Connect Radio. Again, Thursday evenings at 9 or Saturday tea time at 5. If a podcast is your preference, then just ask your smartphone or smart speaker to play the latest episode of RNIB Tech Talk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about Microsoft's Copilot and how this new feature could make a difference to blind and partially sighted people. Robin Spinks, well, he'll be popping in to tell us about some of the latest accessibility features available with Android 14. Plus, we'll be catching up with all the latest news from the recent Accessible Publishing Conference held in London and hosted by Google. Joining me this week are co-hosts Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavarkovich. Gentlemen, welcome in.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
All good. How are you?
Yeah, smashing. Callum?
Yeah, yeah, can't complain.
Have you done all your Christmas shopping?
You're joking. My wife has. I'm a Christmas Eve kind of rushing around last minute person hoping for that next day delivery.
Goodness, you do it that early. I'm like, you know, Christmas Day getting online. Saying, oh, I'm sure a voucher will be fine. Moving on. Hubert, what have you got? What's new in your technology world this week?
Well, I found an alternative, and I've only stumbled on this a few minutes before we started recording. An alternative to the Trainline app powered by National Rail Inquiries has been launched called Railboard. And it seems to be, I've not tested it yet, I've just downloaded it, but it seems to be offering similar functions to Trainline. It seems pretty identical, but apparently quite accessible. So it'd be interesting to compare it to Trainline, which has certain accessibility, I wouldn't say massive issues, but certain accessibility problems. So that's I found an alternative to Trainline for people, which could be interesting. It's something I'm currently investigating.
Yeah, it's a good one, actually. I know quite a few blind and partially sighted people are using the Railboard app on iOS. I've given it a little bit of a go as well. It seems to have fewer adverts, suffer from less of the scrolling issues sometimes in the list of results on the Trainline app. I don't know if you found this, Hugh, but you know, yep. It loses your place, you know, and you kind of got to go back to the top. And yeah, it can be a little bit tricky sometimes with voiceover. So the Railboard app for planning your Christmas travel might be a good one. Callum Stoneman, what's happening in your technology world this week?
Well, I've seen that do you remember a couple of months ago we spoke about this Next Big Thing competition that Freedom Scientific were running? So this was where you could pitch your kind of big ideas for what should be included in JAWS. And the winner of that contest has been announced. It was someone called Abby who suggested that AI image descriptions be built into JAWS. And I don't know how that's going to work in practice, whether it would be, if you scroll past an image with no alt text, it would automatically do an AI description, or if they're going to build it into, you know, if they're going to revamp the Picture Smart feature. But yeah, it's a great suggestion. I'm surprised. I think this is because we've been a bit spoiled with AI image descriptions this year, but I'm surprised we didn't see that or something like that in JAWS 2024, to be fair.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's quite a bit of jiggery-pokery behind the scenes that's got to be resolved in terms of, you know, all the privacy stuff, and then how do you pay for it, and how much are people going to use it, and all that stuff, you know? So it's a little bit more complicated than it initially seems. I know that you know, my social media at least goes into a tailspin whenever, you know, Be My AI is offline for an hour or two. And, you know, everybody's sort of freaking out about that. So,
yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. And, of course, you've got to, you know, negotiate with the provider to make sure, you know, that there's some sort of service level agreement. And then what happens with privacy and people's faces and all that stuff, it's a real tangly business. So yeah, I you know, if it feels like Freedom Scientific are late to that party, it's sort of understandable, really, you know, because there's a lot of things they've got to get sorted out in the background.
It's different, I suppose, if you've got Be My AI, which you're uploading the pictures, so you've got some control over it. But I suppose, yeah, you're right, if it's built into a screen reader and it's, I don't know if this is how it's going to work, just to be very clear on that, but if it's analysing everything as you're working, then yeah, I suppose the privacy of that is huge. So yeah, they've got to do it properly if they're going to do it.
Well, and you want it to be performant, right? I mean, you know, it takes a few seconds with Be My AI to send in the picture and generate the description. And in a screen reading context, you know, if you were on a, I don't know, a PowerPoint or something like that, you would want it to sort of be doing that kind of caper in the background before you got to the image, so that you got the description bang straight away, like you would any other content with a screen reader.
Yeah. I don't know if it's actually going to happen. I assume it will in some form, but that was the competition winner anyway. So we'll see where that goes.
Interesting stuff. Well, we will follow that and bring you any news as we get it. Well, Hubert Callum, stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Now, Microsoft has many features which use AI and many other productivity tools to help people be more productive with Microsoft applications while being accessible at the same time. Now, here we are going to discuss the Copilot feature and exactly what it is, how it works, and how it could potentially be used as an accessibility tool. Joining me to talk about this is Microsoft's Modern Workplace Specialist, Harry Reid. Harry, welcome to Tech Talk.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's get into Copilot, and it's a fascinating feature. Can you tell us what it is exactly and how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. So Copilot is Microsoft's venture into the world of artificial intelligence. It's very interesting because artificial intelligence sounds very futuristic, but actually it's nothing new. AI has been around for a very long time, but what we're seeing now is we're moving into the era of what we call generative AI. So the ability for artificial intelligence to generate new content. And Copilot is a generative AI solution that kind of sits inside all of your Microsoft Office 365 applications. So you have Copilot in Microsoft Word, you have Copilot in Excel, PowerPoint, Teams, and Outlook. And at its very, very simplest, the way that I would describe Copilot to somebody who I guess isn't technical, is I would say, it is the ability to use natural language to ask your Microsoft applications to perform tasks for you. So what's really exciting is the use of that sort of use of natural language element. We're really opening up the ability to use AI to everybody, not just people who are very technical or who have years of IT experience. All you need is the ability to ask in natural language what you would like your Microsoft application to do. And we call this like a prompt, right? So write the prompt in natural language and you can ask your Microsoft applications to do things for you.
That is really interesting. So it's something that, although it's a feature designed for every user, you know, this can technically, you know, would you say this can technically be used as an accessibility tool?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the best things about Microsoft for me, and one of the things that I always find really interesting, is Microsoft build their applications with accessibility in mind. So we say by design rather than as an afterthought. So when we develop new tools and products, we think about accessibility first in that initial development stage. And as we create the solutions, rather than create a solution and then sort of retrospectively go, oh, great, how can we make this accessible? So absolutely, Copilot can be can really, really help those who have a need of additional accessibility requirements. And that can come in a manner of different forms. It can come through sort of permanent accessibility requirements or temporary. So what we mean by temporary is those kind of, if you have like a broken arm, how can you leverage the accessibility tools on a temporary basis? Or if you have sort of visual impairments, or if you're hard of hearing, those kind of permanent accessibility requirements, how can you use the tools on a permanent basis to help make everything more accessible? There's some really interesting use cases, particularly for those who have a kind of visual impairment. So within Windows 11, we have the kind of voice activation, the voice commands, so you can control everything using just your voice. And you can leverage Copilot by using the dictation function. So you can, rather than type your request, so let's say, as an example, you open up a brand new Word document and you say to Copilot, write me a business case, let's say, for my organization to become more sustainable. Now, typically, I would type that in. But if you wanted, you could use the dictation function and you could say, verbally, you could say, write me a business case to become, for my organization to become more sustainable. Click generate, and Copilot will automatically write you a sustainability business case without you having to lift a finger. You can then use the accessibility functions to review that content. So what we always say is never take the first draft of AI generated content without reviewing it first. And if you have a visual impairment, you can use the accessibility features to have Microsoft Word read that content out to you out loud. So as a way of reviewing it, you have AI that's automatically written you this business case, and you can then have Word read it back out to you. And you can then make the kind of decisions by saying, okay, well, that bit's not quite right, or those numbers don't quite add up. Whatever you would then need to do to amend that document before sending it on or publishing it or whatever you wanted to do with it.
So with Copilot being an AI feature and using artificial intelligence, what other accessibility features at this point within Microsoft can benefit from artificial intelligence?
That's a very, very good question. I would say, as a kind of blanket statement, you can use all of the accessibility features you currently use alongside Copilot. Copilot is there to make things happen a bit quicker, make things more efficient, and it's to take the laborious elements of your workload out of it. So a lot of scenarios we have are people finding content. So let's say, for example, if you have a visual impairment, as an example, and you need to reference a load of different documents, looking for specific pieces of information to pull that into the piece of work that you're creating, that can be quite a lengthy, challenging kind of task for somebody with a visual impairment, right? You have all of these different documents, you're looking for key pieces of information. How do you appropriately extract the information you're looking for? And that can take a long time. Even if you don't have a visual impairment, I find it very, very sort of challenging to sift through lengthy documents, searching for key passages or key bits of information that to help me in the piece of work that I'm doing. with Copilot as a new feature, what it'll do is it'll scan all of the content of those documents automatically and surface the information that it thinks that you would need based off of your request. So if we go back to my kind of sustainability example, and we say, okay, we're writing this sustainability business case, it will pull information, it'll scan all of your kind of documentation in your SharePoint libraries and in your OneDrive, but also it will search online, it'll search the web. So I work with London Council specifically, which are, they're a great use case for using Copilot because a lot of their information is publicly available. And so if I'm writing a sustainability business case as an example, it will search the council's website for any initiatives they have around sustainability. It'll search my internal documentation for things that I've worked on with other customers and all that kind of stuff. And it'll pull it into one document. And it takes a task that traditionally probably would have taken, let's say, half a day or a day. And it reduces it down to, and this is no exaggeration, sort of 5 to 10 minutes. The onus is then on you for, you know, even quicker, less than 5 minutes. The onus is then on you to read through that content, make sure it's correct, and then away you go. So we're removing that really for my mind, I would use the word exhausting, those exhausting admin tasks. We're now passing those over to artificial intelligence, to automation, making things easier and quicker, with the added benefit that you can use all of the accessibility features you've used before to help you, you know, continue to do great work.
So if people want to take advantage of the Copilot feature, you know, when can they do it? Is it already available? And how much does it cost? Is it free or do you have to pay for it? What's the information on that one?
So, another really great question. Copilot was released publicly as of the 1st of November. So at the time of this interview and probably, you know, by the time, you kind of release this interview, we're looking at it being less than a month old, I would imagine. 1st of November was when it got released. We're talking about brand new technology that's going to completely change the way that people work. I kind of think of it as two main paradigm shifts in kind of information working and office working, right? During the pandemic, we were kind of forced into that flexible working, a big change in corporate working, people having the ability to work from home. And we are literally now just on the cusp of the AI generation. So the ability for people to use this artificial intelligence to help them. In terms of how people could get their hands on Copilot, at the moment, it's available to only to sort of corporate organizations. There's a minimum number of licenses that you have to buy at any one time. So if your company or your organization wanted to buy Copilot, you'd have to buy a minimum of 300 licenses. Those licenses are around £25.50 per user per month. We have people seeing the value in that already. So we have a lot of customers who have been on our what we call our early access program. So we've had some very big local government, certainly in my world, local government councils, a lot of big corporate organizations as well who have been testing it out, finding those use cases, understanding where organizations can get that return on investment. And so now we're kind of having those conversations with, now that it's generally available, with everybody else and kind of saying, okay, these are the scenarios where people have been using Copilot. These are the benefits that we found. But because it's so new, we are still at that stage where we can show you what it does. And then you kind of like, if you find a way to use it that really, really saves you time or makes a huge business impact, let us know, because we'd love to share it with the world.
Well, absolutely. And if you are using Copilot or listening to this, you are thinking of using it and you will use it and you want to give us some impressions, do also let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk if you have any thoughts or experience of Copilot. We would love to hear it. One final question for you, Harry, is all about accessibility and AI, because we've seen a lot of potential with what AI can do for accessibility. Is there anything you can share with us on future collaboration between AI and accessibility, whether it's to enhance the already existing accessibility features or possibly create new ones?
As with everything we do, I will always say accessibility is taken into consideration from the very initial development of Microsoft solutions. I will always say it's not an afterthought. It's something we think about at the very, very beginning, whether that be through hardware or software. And the future of AI definitely is going to have a huge business impact, efficiency impact for everybody, whether you have accessibility requirements or not. You will be able to use these solutions exactly the same as everyone else, and you'll be able to reap the benefits that come with it. So even if you have accessibility requirements, you will be able to really feel the benefit of AI. Your work will become more efficient, everything will become easier. And as we journey through this new world of AI, right, it's only a week old, so we're talking brand new stuff here. I can see it only getting stronger. Any changes that we make to the solution, any future developments and improvements we make to the solution, accessibility will always be in mind. Be that, you know, new features, you know, as the need arises, as we see a gap, we'll develop a solution to fix it, to make it more accessible, so that we can, you know, empower every person everywhere.
Well, that is certainly exciting as well, and it's certainly something we will be following very closely, as it is fantastic to see the accessibility developments that Microsoft provides, and it is the stage where a lot of blind and partially sighted people want to see accessibility head, where it shouldn't be an afterthought. It should be by design. So it is fantastic to hear that this is what Microsoft is indeed trying to achieve together with many other companies. But for now, Harry Reid, Modern Workplace Specialist at Microsoft, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much to Hubert there for your interview with Harry Reid. I suppose it's important to emphasize that Copilot is a little bit of a catch-all term that Microsoft are using to refer to a number of different services, or perhaps a number of different ways that you might experience the Copilot offering. So you've got what was Bing Chat, which is now called Copilot. There's Copilot in Windows 11, and then there's Copilot for Enterprise, which I'm guessing, Hubert, is what Harry was talking about there.
Yes, indeed. That is what he mainly described in the interview and kind of the main topic we covered.
All righty. Callum, what do you make of Copilot? Are you confused or are you excited?
I think we need a bit of clarification on the names, don't we? Because, as you said, Copilot at the minute is a bit of a catch-all term for, I guess, a suite of AI tools. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it could be good in terms of just generally, you know, if you get the basics of an email, because, for example, Copilot, I don't know if this is available now, but it's going to be in things like Outlook. So if you've got the basics of an email written up, and then you just say to it, you know, make this a little bit more professional, or make this a bit, you know, make this more of a summary, you know, that could be really useful. But then also, I do wonder about things like PowerPoint, because I've always found creating PowerPoints to be really not inaccessible, because the app isn't, you know, PowerPoint itself isn't inaccessible, but I just really struggle with creating PowerPoints and getting them looking good and making sure they're styled properly and stuff. I just can't seem to get my head around it. So if Copilot could help with that, you know, if you can just put in, create a nice looking PowerPoint to describe this, or, you know, add this image to this slide, then, yeah, could be a bit of a game changer.
Satya Nadella, the Microsoft CEO, said, "We are the Copilot company. We believe in a future where there will be a Copilot available for everyone." What do you think the Copilot's going to do for you, Hubert?
I mean, for me, I'd be curious as to what it, speaking of, for example, PowerPoint presentations, you know, I always find PowerPoints maybe not inaccessible to read, but a bit tricky, where it's a bit nicer to read a document. You know, can you ask Copilot to kind of summarize a PowerPoint presentation into a Word document, you know, take out all the key points and put them in a Word document, something like that, make something into a different kind of format, or take a long report and kind of go, look, this report is about 60 pages long. Can you summarize it into key points? You know, it's kind of making productivity quicker and easier, which I think would be quite interesting.
Prioritizing notifications and an email would be a good one, I think, for me. You know, a lot of streams of information coming at me from all sorts of different directions. And, you know, it'd be quite useful to just have one interface that prioritizes, right, this is things that you need to deal with right now. You know, this is the time critical stuff. This is the things that can wait, and something that will, you know, sort of be a bit better at filtering out the stuff that can be distracting. And I don't know, but then do you miss out then, you know, do you miss the opportunities if the machine's making the decisions? So it's going to be really interesting to see how this one evolves over time, which I'm sure it will. Let us know, have you had any experience with Microsoft Copilot, albeit through the Bing chat, or in Windows 11, or maybe you work for a large enterprise who've got Copilot for Office 365. Well, Callum, Hubert, thank you very much. In early October, Google released Android 14, the most recent version of the company's mobile operating system for Android-powered smartphones and other devices. And joining me on his Pixel is Robin Spinks, RNIB's lead for inclusive design. Robin, welcome to Tech Talk. Good to have you with us. Can you just share with us some of the new features in Android 14 that will benefit blind and partially sighted listeners?
Yeah, good to be here, Dave. So Android 14 comes with many vision and hearing inclusive features. So for low vision users, there's an improved magnifier on Android 14 that's a bit more intuitive, with the ability to pinch to zoom in and out from 100%. And you can also change the magnifier size in a new magnifier settings panel, and customize how much of the screen that you'd like magnified. And that also to prevent your magnifier from turning off when you go from app to app, you can set your magnification to keep on when switching apps. So very small, perhaps for some people difficult to spot adjustments and changes. You can also improve readability, and you can quickly change the font size of the text on your device with an Android 14's font size quick settings tile. And you can enjoy better readability with non-linear font scaling as well, which enlarges larger font sizes at a slower rate than smaller font sizes. Again, that's a very kind of detailed point, but if you're a regular magnification user like me, you might be appreciative of that feature. So yeah, lots of different changes. That also prevents text that's already large enough from getting bigger than necessary. So, you know, that way you can read your screen without the text getting cut off, or the text wrapping to multiple lines or breaking the page layout. So lots of small usability features in terms of magnification and text size that I think people, you know, may or may not have noticed, but if you're a regular user, you probably have noticed. So yeah, lots of improvements there.
Okay, so that's the magnification in terms of enlarging elements of the on-screen experience, apps and settings and messages and so on. Can you tell us a bit about the magnifier? So this was originally known as the Pixel Magnifier. I think it's now just Magnifier from Google. And this comes as a standalone app, I believe.
That's right, Dave. So back in, December 2021, we started to have a conversation with Google about the Magnifier utility that there is on iOS. So iOS users will know that if you go into your accessibility settings, there's a feature called Magnifier, which is not the same thing as Zoom. So this is Magnifier for magnifying hard copy content. One of the things in iOS people have done is they've switched that on as a shortcut so that you can get access to Magnifier. I've personally used it a lot in, you know, pubs and restaurants, and maybe for reading price labels if I'm in a physical store. We started to talk to Google about the fact that that didn't exist on the Android platform, and there seemed to be a bit of a missed opportunity. And out of that conversation was born Magnifier. So if you search for it on the Play Store, if you put in Google LLC Magnifier, you'll find it straight away. It's blue, quite a bright blue with white kind of markings. And really what Magnifier does is it enables people who are low vision to have a good hard copy magnifier provided by their smartphone. So, you know, typical scenario, gone to the restaurant with your friends or family, or gone for a coffee and you want to look at the menu. And if you're anything like me, the menu's always too small for you to be able to read it comfortably. So you can launch Pixel Magnifier and you can do the same things that you can do by and large with the Apple app. So thinking about color filters, thinking about contrast and saturation, and of course magnification size as well. So it's the first version of the app. It's out there for people to have a look at, tell us what they think of it, and hopefully they'll find it useful. I mean, I use Magnifier on my iOS device and Android device every day to do everything from looking at insects that my children have discovered in the garden through to reading menus, to reading medication packaging. So magnification is an absolutely critical element of every day for me.
And how well does that work in low light? Are you able to enable the torch to view content that way?
It's quite variable. So you can absolutely add illumination to it, and that'll help. You know, if you're in a very dark environment, it could be difficult to read, but certainly in terms of, you know, most of the kind of indoor settings that I've found myself in, I've been able to use it really well. I haven't tried it out in the dark, in the forest on a walk. I haven't tried it there yet. I will do. But we'd love people to try it and just tell us what they think of it. You know, tell us how it can be improved as well, because none of these things are static. You know, it's there, it's on the store, it's getting a lot of attention. But tell us how you think it could be made even better, because that's what it's all about, the product journey.
And for you, Robin, what's the benefit of having a digital magnifier like that on your smartphone as opposed to a separate digital? Because you can buy standalone video magnifiers that you can carry around with you. You know, obviously it's a separate thing to charge, but obviously there's some unique benefits to having it right there on your phone.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for me, it's the device I've got with me all the time. I want everything centered on the one device. That's not going to work for everybody. So some people will understandably want a separate device to do their magnification from. And that, you know, that's quite right. So for some people, that'll be the right option. For me, I want it centered on my phone. And also, I encounter so many situations on a daily basis where I need magnification, either for near vision, for reading, or even for distance vision, where I want to look at something that's across the street or further away. If I'm in a shopping context, you know, magnification is something that I use. I'd almost say every hour of every day I'm using magnification of some kind. So I want it baked into the phone, and also want it to be simple and easy to use. And if it's an app on my phone, the great thing about that is as the app develops and new features are added, new functionalities added, it'll just drop onto my phone. in the updates. That's not always the case with a standalone video magnifier. So lots of benefits, but I think it's important that both solutions exist for the diversity of needs that are out there.
Absolutely. I know you're somebody who has an iOS phone in one pocket and an Android phone in the other. One of the things that you tell me regularly you appreciate about Android is the keyboard. Could you just speak to that?
Yeah, so Gboard, which is the default Google keyboard that's on most Android phones, it's on the Pixel phones out of the box, just generally I've found it to be a really, for me, it's been a good experience. So I've been able to achieve a colour contrast where I've got very bright white letters on a completely black background, which gives me maximum contrast. Also, Gboard obviously does swipe typing, and it may or may not be helpful for people to change the colour of the trails. So the trail is the line that basically tracks where your finger has gone on the keyboard. If it's useful to you to change that to different colour for whatever reason, you can do that. So Android 14 allows you a huge amount of customization of background and foreground colours and accent colours, as they call them. So you can change that. But also the haptics are really good on the keyboard. So I think it's a very individual thing. You know, I've used most of the keyboards that are out there, on-screen keyboards. And I think, you know, what I would encourage people to do is to try options that are out there. So if you haven't tried Gboard, try that. There are lots of options out there that it would be worth experimenting with, but I've enjoyed that a lot and found it to work quite well for me. So my routine is typically a mixture of swipe typing with predictive, or it is more often than not, it's voice typing. So that's another thing on the Pixel devices specifically, is dictation. Very good, actually, I have to say. I do think that dictation on the Pixel devices has pulled ahead of other options that are out there. That's been my experience. I'd of course love to hear what other people's experience has been, but certainly something I would encourage people to try if they are big dictation users. So I, in a work setting, I tend to write a lot of emails using voice, so, you know, voice typing. I think I'm a reasonably clear speaker. The clearer a speaker you are, the better a result you should typically have. And I think, you know, one of the strategies you can learn to do is to chunk, where you essentially build a little paragraph or a little sentence in your mind and you speak it, then you have a pause, then you speak another one. And as you develop that ability, you should start to find that the results that you get from voice typing begin to get better over time. So it's not for everybody. It's about what works for you, and it's really important for people to have options. But I think if you're low vision and you're a smartphone user and it's something you haven't tried, I would encourage people to take a look at it, because the accuracy level's generally very good, I would say, and it's quick.
Yeah, it does work well, as does the Braille screen input as well, for those of us that like to use that. Braille screen input is also available on Android. All right, Robin, before we let you go, just want to check, was there anything else in Android 14 that you wanted to highlight?
I mean, I think it's worth people taking a look at the Google blog, so blog.google, and you can look at Android 14. There's a section called More Customization, Control and Accessibility Features, and that was published on the 4th of October. It's a 6-minute read. I guess that depends how quickly you read and what method you choose to read it. That's interesting, isn't it? But that'll talk to you a bit more about, for example, some of the hearing impairment features that are in there that will be helpful for people who've also got hearing loss. And just give you a general overview and give you more information about Android 14. So check it out.
Robin Spinks there with a brief look at some of the new accessibility enhancements available in Android 14. Robin, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Pleasure. Thank you, Dave.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag #AskTechTalk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we are here at the Accessible Publishing Conference, organised by RNIB and the DAISY Consortium, and hosted by Google. And joining me now is Chris Patno, the Head of Accessibility and Disability Inclusion. And can you tell us which region you work for, Chris?
Yeah, being nerds, we use acronyms for everything. So my region is called EMEA, which is short for Europe, Middle East and Africa.
We are here at the inaugural Accessible Publishing Conference, and can I ask you, you know, as we approach the end of today's events, how important are events like these to help such an important cause as is accessible publishing?
I think there's immense value in having conversations like this. It is sort of the mantra of nothing about us without us. We need to bring the publishers and the people together so we can understand where the gaps are. And once we understand the gaps, organizations like Amazon and Google, et cetera, we can come together to find solutions. And together we get to create an environment where everyone gets the entertainment and learning that they want.
And when it comes to technological advancements in accessible publishing, you know, what particular technological advancements do you think have been the highlight, really, of the most recent years to make publishing accessible content easier and consuming it easier?
I'm quite fond of the technology that we've just discussed today, where you can use simple TTS technology but thoughtfully designed, so you have high quality voices, different genders, different accents, but you could also go in and tune it, so you can insert the pauses, you can insert breaths, and you can make it sound like a human reading a story. Now, there's a place for humans reading stories and reading books, but sometimes, because it's so expensive, many books don't get translated into audiobooks. Tools like this really make it possible to have much more content be made available, things that you wouldn't do because of the cost. Now we sort of democratize the ability to create audiobooks for everyone.
When it comes to working with various organizations, you know, you've got RNIB here, you've got Amazon, you've got obviously Google, you've got the DAISY Consortium. Mm-hmm. How important is it that all these organizations collaborate together and learn from each other?
It's critically important, because no one organization is going to have all the answers. Different people are good at different things, different organizations are good at different things. But by working together with the RNIB and the DAISY Consortium, we can understand where we could do better and how we can make these things better for all of our users.
And when it comes to some of the challenges regarding publishing of accessible content, what is the biggest challenge, do you think, at the moment, and how are Google working to partly solve it?
Well, I think one of the challenges we have is the awareness of the opportunity and people still thinking that it's a niche business. Anna Tyler told a wonderful story this afternoon about someone poking her, saying no one's going to want to have audiobooks. This is true for all kinds of technology. The technology will evolve over time, and that we need to have more content available to more people. From an education perspective, it provides jobs. From an entertainment perspective, it brings people together. So having access to a common language, a common set of stories, brings our culture closer together.
When it comes to future developments in technology and technology for publishing accessible content, is there a particular development you are looking forward to enhancing or forward to coming in to play to help make content more accessible?
I think the easy answer is going to be AI. Artificial intelligence, machine learning, these kinds of tools will make it easier to create more inclusive content. It'll make it easier to consume content. But also, I'd like to go back to some of the old school kind of AI, like OCR and computer vision, where we can take existing books, for example. We have a cool application called Lookout, which can scan an entire page and read it out to you. So you can take real books that were never created to be accessible and be able to consume stories in it like that.
Fantastic. Chris Patno, Head of Accessibility and Disability Inclusion, thank you very much for joining us here at the Accessible Publishing Conference on RNIB Connect Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And I'm currently joined by software engineer Roman Deltour, who did a presentation just now about various accessibility testing tools. Roman, thank you very much for joining us here.
Sure.
Can we start with one of the tools that you can tell us about? Can you tell us a bit about ACE, what it is and what it stands for and how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. ACE by DAISY. ACE is a short name for Accessibility Check-in for EPUB. It's an automated tool that can receive an EPUB as input and automatically run a series of checks for that EPUB for accessibility. And it will produce a report, an HTML report that can be read on a browser by humans, and that can also produce a machine-readable report that can be later used by later stages in the accessibility evaluation processing workflow.
Can you also tell us about the SMART tool?
Yeah. SMART is an acronym for Simple and Manual Accessibility Reporting Tool. It's a free online service provided by the DAISY Consortium where you can run manually a fully automated accessibility audit for your digital publications. So SMART basically provides you with a super-powered checklist that will guide you on how to evaluate your EPUB.
Can we now move on to the EPUB Check tool?
Right, so EPUB Check is a W3C project maintained by the DAISY Consortium, and it's the conformance checker for EPUB. So it will get an EPUB publication and tell you whether it is conforming to the EPUB specification. So it's not an accessibility checker per se, but it is the very good first step when you want to tell whether your EPUB is accessible. It's always a good step to investigate whether your EPUB is conforming to the EPUB specification.
Finally, can we talk about the knowledge base that you have mentioned during your presentation?
Yeah, the DAISY knowledge base is a website that kind of digests various specifications, and from there you can browse by topics, keywords, and you can understand and learn about various techniques, ways to make an EPUB accessible, and find examples of techniques on how to make your EPUB accessible. And also the interesting part is that this knowledge base integrates very well with the accessibility tools that we talked about before, like ACE and SMART. From the tools, you can access the knowledge base, which will then provide guidance on how to remediate any accessibility issues.
Fantastic. Now, you know what I'm going to ask you now. So earlier in the presentation, you have given us a little bit of an entertainment feature with your little catchphrase. Can I ask you to say that catchphrase for us, just at the listeners?
No promise, but I'll try. How much EPUB could EPUB check check if EPUB check could check EPUB?
And there we go. There we go. Fantastic. Ramon Del Toro, thank you very much for joining us here and telling us about some of the accessibility tools to help make more accessible content here at the Accessible Publishing Conference on RNIB Connect Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And joining me now is the Chief Executive of the DAISY Consortium, Richard Orme. Richard, thank you very much for joining us.
It's lovely to be with you, Hubert.
So, Richard, first of all, can you tell us what the DAISY Consortium is?
Well, the DAISY Consortium, of which RNIB is a founder member, so thank you, RNIB, for all your involvement in a consortium. It's the global non-profit organisation that's focused on ensuring that access to books and other publications is possible for people with print disabilities. And by that we mean people who are blind, who are low vision, who have maybe other print disabilities such as dyslexia or physical problems, which means they can't read a regular book.
And this is the inaugural Accessible Publishing Conference that we are at. And can you tell us kind of your hopes and expectations as a result of this conference?
You know, as the DAISY Consortium, we've held this type of event all around the world, in Japan, in Sweden, in the USA. So it's wonderful as a Brit to now be running this type of event here in the UK together with RNIB. And so the purpose of these types of events is really to shine a light on the whole publishing industry and work with the partners in that industry to make sure that books are produced in a way that works for people who need to read through their eyes, through their ears, or through their fingers. And by this we mean people who need larger print, people who want to listen to audiobooks or hear through synthetic speech, or will be reading through the medium of Braille. And not a book, when it's produced originally, isn't necessarily easy to read. And if it's a textbook or something more complex, might require quite a lot of work to make it truly accessible. And so that's what we're discussing here in today's conference, is the journey that we've come and what a journey it's been.
And when it comes to the DAISY format itself, for those that don't know, can you give us a brief description of what the DAISY format is and its potential and benefits?
Well, we've just held the 2 days of the DAISY board meeting here, actually, still at Google in the previous 2 days, with DAISY members. These are libraries all around the world delivering talking books and digital textbooks. And many of them are using the DAISY format because it's amazing accessibility and its support across a whole range of different devices. DAISY talking book players, for example. And this means that someone who is not reading a regular print book can have an equitable experience. The ability to be able to use a table of contents, to navigate by page, to hear the description of images that are in there, to leave bookmarks and so on. So it's a very, very powerful reading format that, as I say, is used by the DAISY libraries. But we realized about 10 years ago that the mainstream publishing industry wasn't going to pick up this format. And so what we did is we took all of the good stuff we developed for the DAISY format and we've built that right into the mainstream formats used by the ebooks that people are reading today, and the ebooks and the audiobooks. So we've built accessibility right into the mainstream formats.
How would you encourage companies and publishers to take advantage of the DAISY format to make their content more accessible for people with disabilities?
I'd encourage all companies involved in the publishing industry, because many are involved. There's the authors, of course, there's the publishers, there's the companies that make the digital books and the audio books, all to be paying attention to the accessibility standards, including DAISY, but also the EPUB accessibility standard, and those that come from the international groups. Pay attention to those, whatever they're, to make sure that they're applicable to the formats they're producing. And the good news is, these are well-established approaches. They're international approaches, so you don't have to produce something different for the UK market, for Germany, for Korea, or for Kenya, for example. And the tools and the information that's out there makes it so much easier for a publisher to do what they want to do, which is to reach the widest market possible for their books. So using the features that we developed first in the DAISY format and now in mainstream formats, they should take up those standards. And also importantly, make sure that they're connecting with readers with print disabilities to understand how they can further improve what they're producing, because accessibility is a journey, it's not an endpoint.
And if companies wanted to take advantage of the DAISY format, how can they find out as to how to go about it?
Well, that's really easy. If they visit the website daisy.org, there they'll find all sorts of stories, testimonials, free tools, and access to standards, as well as case studies too. And there's also links across to the inclusivepublishing.org website, where they'll hear messages and case studies from publishers all around the world that are using these inclusive publishing approaches. So this really is a jumping off point for people to begin to learn whether they want to understand just what is accessible reading and who are people with print disabilities, right through to a knowledge base with code snippets in there that tell them how they could make mathematics accessible or provide an extended description to a complicated infographic. All of the information is there on those two websites, daisy.org and inclusivepublishing.org. It's all there.
Fantastic. Richard Orme, Chief Executive of the DAISY Consortium, thank you very much for talking to us here at the Accessible Publishing Conference on RNIB Connect Radio.
That's it. We are coming to the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company as ever. Don't forget to keep in touch. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, you're going to be away for the next few weeks.
Yes, I am indeed. When this is actually coming out, I will be on guide dog training. I'll be starting my guide dog training for a few weeks.
Fantastic. Is this your first guide dog?
First indeed, yes. It's been 5 years in the waiting.
So you weren't tempted to wait for the robots?
Well, it's the longer I was waiting, the more I was considering it.
Well, good luck. I remember we were chatting about this off air, and I was saying to Hubert, and anyone who's currently got a guide dog or has been a guide dog owner will know exactly what I mean. I was saying off air, you are in for a proper roller coaster.
Well, that's what I've been told. I'm nervous and excited. It's all an unknown at the moment because I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen, what times. I just know where I need to turn up. So yeah.
Presumably, you've met the dog.
Yes, I have. Yes, now thankfully that's happened. I've met my match.
Yeah, you've met your match. I like it. All right. Well, good luck with all of that, Hubert. We wish you well on behalf of all the Tech Talk listeners, and stay in touch. And I'm sure you will be back as soon as you can. Wishing Hubert well there as he heads off onto guide dog training. Well, that's just me and you, Callum Storman, keeping the ship afloat, and our trusty producer as well. Well, thanks so much for listening. Do tune in next time when we'll be telling you about an exciting technology event coming to Northern Ireland. Yes, indeed. That's next time here on Tech Talk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Callum Storman, and Hubert Pavarkovich, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.